Welcome to the Ogletree Deacons Podcast, a brief discussion of compelling legal issues and practical insights. Please note that the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended to be, nor should it be construed as legal advice. You can subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts or through your favorite podcast service. Please consider rating and reviewing so that we may continue to provide the content that covers your needs. Please enjoy the program.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us for the Ogletree Deacons Podcast today. My name is Kevin Bland, and I'm an Orange County shareholder specializing in workplace safety for, I'm getting old, almost 20 years. I'm here with Karen Tynan, the chair of our Western Region OSHA practice. She's based here in Sacramento, California. The podcast today is part one in a series of conversations Karen and I will have about CalOSHA appeal defenses, understanding those defenses, and a discussion of some of the burdens of proof that go along with appeals and litigating those appeals. This particular series of podcasts is perfect for general counsels for firms, human resource managers, risk managers, safety professionals within your organization that could use a deeper dive and understanding of how to litigate these appeals of CalOSHA citations, what the available defenses may be, and how the burden of proof works on these defenses and in a CalOSHA appeal in order to defeat the citations that have been issued.
So buckle up.
Right, you're Kevin? Ready, Karen? All right.
This is the big stuff.
So let's start with the most basic issue that is confronted and very seldom talked about, the burden of proof in litigating a CalOSHA citation. So Karen, what can you tell us about the burden of proof? Let's first start with the burden of proof that CalOSHA may have.
And so that burden of proof is the preponderance of evidence. And sometimes I find clients have watched a little too much Law and Order, and they've heard beyond a reasonable doubt, right? Or clear and convincing evidence. That's not what we're talking about in our forum. Would you agree that that's a little bit of something we have to educate the clients about at the beginning of the case, is that CalOSHA will have a burden of proof of the preponderance of evidence on particular elements or penalties, right? But so it's a little different, and you can think of it as kind of on a scale, that grain of rice that takes you past 50%, right? It's about probability. And so that's important, I think, for clients to understand, is that the division, the attorney or inspector, district manager, who's ever putting on the case, has that burden of proof, but that preponderance of evidence standard is also the standard for us, correct?
Correct.
When we're putting on our evidence. So starting out with that kind of foundational understanding before we get into something exotic like the Independent Employee Act defense, I think is helpful. And that's why we structured this series that way.
No, absolutely. Thanks, Karen, because that is something that I think people sometimes have a misunderstanding of how easy it is on one side versus the other at times. Besides the burden of proof, which is basically what does the evidence say and which weight is it on the scale balanced to, another issue that comes up, and we face this a lot, is late appeals. So can you kind of walk me through how some of the problems you see and what are the standards in late appeals?
Sure. So Kevin, and it's something that happens more often than we'd like, is that we're faced with trying to rehabilitate and turn straw into gold where an employer has waited too many days past the 15 working days. And it's important to understand that there is no relief from default. There's no excusable neglect for late appeals. And that's very foundational in understanding how you're going to litigate your case or put forward defenses. So Kevin and I cannot even tussle in court or try to really put forward a great case for you if you don't file the appeal or have us file the appeal on time. So some of the typical problems we'll see is that the mail isn't handled correctly, or the person at a company that was handling it doesn't get to it in a timely manner. And it's important to know that an employer misunderstanding the appeal process or the 15 working days is not good cause for a late appeal. So when Kevin and I are starting out in a case and we're trying to develop defenses or prevent a series of serious citations from being on your record, we can't do anything with a late appeal. So I know that that's not a defense, but I felt like it was important to put it in this podcast because of the foundational understanding that we need employers to have. And that late standard is also true for petitions for recon, petitions for reconsideration,
yes,
which you and I file frequently. And that's another common misunderstanding. You'll see, I'd say, oodles of petitions for recon that are denied just as untimely. You see those decisions, right?
Right.
And don't get to any substantive arguments, nothing like that. If your petition for recon is late, there's no late filing, no excusable neglect. So I think that foundationally, before you can put forward a great defense, could we just be on time and calendar responses? How about that, Kevin?
Well, that's good. And I'm going to throw a couple other things in here. So those of you that are very large corporations with multiple locations, so you're a big retailer. So what happens is the corporate office is in Hoboken, right? And another state in Hoboken. And they're used to the lawsuits because everybody, whenever you file a lawsuit, who do you serve? The person that's there for service of process on the Secretary of State's website.
Right.
Well, not Cal OSHA. They don't have to comply with that. They will serve whoever's in the mailroom at the retail location where you have three people and the manager that was there whenever the OSHA inspection is no longer there. And there's another manager there that says, well, this happened under the other guy's watch. I don't know what this is. And that's how these late appeals. So my moral to my story to this is that one, that is proper service once someone from your company signs for it. And oftentimes this happens is that the person in the mailroom, because they sign, it's not like a process server that comes in with this thing, right, Karen?
Right, it's just certified mail.
Yeah, certified mail. They sign for all the mail, and there it is, and it gets put on the desk, and then you run through the 15 working days, and it's gone. So it's very important once you've had an inspection to make whoever aware at that location, all the way down to the mailroom person, that there's going to be a very important Cal OSHA document coming. Right. And so that's, I just wanted to kind of throw that in, Karen. What do you think? Has that been your experience?
That's my experience. So sometimes I'll even write an email to the inspector or district manager and say, I'll accept service via email. Sometimes they'll agree to it. Sometimes they'll say, well, I can't serve you by email, but when I mail the certified copy, I will send you a courtesy copy via email.
Yeah.
And so it helps me know what the date of issue is, what the date of mailing is. And I can calendar the 15 days. So I know you do that too, where we just stipulate to accept email service so we can get a copy of it.
Well, and another little nuance too, and I've got them on this one, where we'll say, hey, from this point forward, here's our notice of rep. All correspondence, I tell you, everything needs to be sent to our office.
Yes.
And so then when they don't follow that directive, it gives us an out for the
client. I have
client.
Won a late appeal on that.
Yeah, I have too. Yeah, I've won several on that one.
Right.
So that is a little nuance of it. But if it's outside counsel, that's one thing. But if it's just saying, hey, Bob is the one that's supposed to receive these, or Sheila's the one, that doesn't apply.
That.
Yeah,
I'm with you on that one.
Okay. Well, we've covered burdens. We've covered late appeals and late petitions for reconsideration.
About reporting requirements, because that's a foundational issue. And when we appeal 342 citations, boy, oh boy, do we get into this.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. That's first, those of you that aren't recording gets very confusing. Reporting means a serious injury or illness that is required to be reported directly to Cal OSHA. The regulation is 342. So we have a tendency to call it 342 or 342A reports.
You're getting all the lingo.
Yeah. But it's basically reporting a serious injury. Now, the labor code on this changed, I think, almost 2 years ago. It was January 1st of 2019, so okay, year and a half ago. Now, there was a lot of hubbub about 342A and serious reporting and the law changed and what are we going to do? Well, there was nothing. That was kind of a bunch of ado about nothing back then because Kelosher can't cite to the labor code. They can only cite to Title VIII regulations. And so that was our calming statement back then is that, hey, until it becomes Title VIII, we don't worry about it. We stay status quo. Well, now it's become Title VIII. They snuck it in during COVID in February. And so now it's been codified in Title VIII, and it is a citable regulation for reporting. Now, what has changed in reporting? Only a couple things. One is you can no longer send a telegraph. They took
the telegraph. For all the people with the telegraph machines in their office that they were using to report.
Yeah, no more telegraph. Now it's email or telephone. Now, this is an issue that I raised at the Kelosher Advisory the other day with the Vision because they were supposed to have gotten stakeholder input, or at least that was their promise November of 2019 to all the stakeholders with some of the inconsistencies in here. So the new 342A just says report to the division. Prior to that, it said report to the nearest district office, so we knew where to report. Now, would we send a blind email to the division? And by the way, email and telephone are in vogue until, and the regulation speaks to this, they create a portal to make reports on through the internet. And that will be.
So as of the summer of 2020, there's no portal. So make sure if you're reporting, you check with Kevin. And frankly, many times Kevin or I will do the reporting so that we can follow 342 and comply, right?
Because
you don't want to mess it up.
Yeah. And just a practice point, if you're reporting to yourself, you're having us, if you're going to send an email, be very cognizant of what the rule is and what you put in that email, because that becomes a document that's a public document later. And oh, by the way, the regulation says whatever you have at the time of the report. So you don't have to feel obligated to have all the information, all that, because you're just trying to get it reported so division is aware of it, or Kelosher is aware of whatever the injury is or whatever is reported. Number two thing that changed was the definition of serious injury. It now specifically says amputation. Undefined, by the way, they didn't define amputation as a loss of bone or just medical amputation, which can be so many layers of skin, right? A loss of an eye, which to me was kind of obvious. If you lose an eye, that's kind of serious. And also they've changed now from hospitalization for more than 24 hours for other than observation. Now the 24 hour is removed and it just says inpatient hospitalization for other than observation. So that's undefined. What does inpatient mean? When does it become inpatient? And it could be inpatient for an hour, or it could be inpatient for 2 hours and what have you.
So, is it when you get a bracelet on your arm? Yeah. Is it what is it?
Right. When's the clock start, or when does it become? And it starts immediately upon inpatient, but the requirement to report is immediately upon knowledge that it's serious and no more than 8 hours. And there is a 24-hour thing, but I just say ignore that 24 because the burden, you heard us talk about burdens. It's just a burden us to prove why we couldn't do it within 8 hours. And that's a very hard thing to prove. So forget about the 24, remember the 8, and remember it starts to run when you knew or should have known. The other thing is Kelosher says you knew or should have known whenever the accident happened that it was serious. And so that's when they run the clock. So you can spend a bunch of money defending why you didn't report if you want to run if you end up past the 8 hours. But just make the 8 hours, you save $5,000, you save attorney's fees.
And actually there's been a case interpreting when an employer says, oh, I didn't know of the serious injury and I couldn't have known. And basically the court says, look, it's your job to know. And there are objective indicators about injuries that which would indicate to an employer that it's a serious injury. And so the duty is on the employer to investigate and make determinations so they can comply with 342. So you can't sit back, right?
Right, right. And by the way, Karen, what happens whenever you call 911?
Well,
but it's not a serious injury, as it turns out.
Kevin. So I think one thing, and we've had clients slip up in this, when the fire department takes the guy who got his hand cut off in the Decapitator 3000 machine, right? The fire department calls Kelosher, don't they?
Yeah, well, and it can be a bruised knee. If they transport, they call. There's no serious injury level to that, right, Karen?
Right. And yeah. But they're calling, right? Right? They're calling the district office and going to tell them, hey, we just transported from Kevin's framing company and we're headed to such and such hospital with, you know, and they'll give the name. Well, so then the employer, we've had this happen. They think, oh, well, fireman said that they call it in, or we overheard the fireman on the walkie-talkie or whatever. It doesn't matter, right? It doesn't matter if someone else as a first responder, like for when you call 911, calls it in. It doesn't relieve your burden. And there have been multiple cases on that, right?
Oh, absolutely. And well, and the other flip side of that is it turns out it's a sprained ankle. They're treated at the ER and released in about 45 minutes, and it's not a serious accident. And then a week later, Cal OSHA shows up. Hey, we're here. And they say, well, what are you here for? The injury that the fire department reported. I go, well, that wasn't serious. Well, we're here. Let's inspect.
Yeah, we're so here anyway.
So the moral of this story is when there's a 911 call, know that the fire department's calling. So what I would do to avoid complication and confusion or them showing up unannounced is call that same department, say, hey, I know you got a report from fire department because they rolled to it. It was a sprained ankle, not serious. Therefore, it needs to come off the books.
There you go. And they'll do that.
Yeah.
Absolutely. The district managers don't want to do more work than necessary.
So let's see. We've covered now. We've got the inspection now, right? Mm-hmm. We've reported an injury. Now, another, this is getting into affirmative defenses, right?
Right.
Is they only have a certain length of time to issue citations. How does that work?
Well, so we've got 180 days is what the labor code says, but we happen to be, no matter when you're listening to this podcast, we are in the COVID summer, and there's a 60-day extension, right, that Governor Newsom did in an executive order. It's 240 days right now, but typically, and the mantra that Kevin and I want you to understand is there is a six-month statute of limitations for issuing the citations. And actually, I have had an inspection that came at like 6 months and 3 days after an alleged hazard. It wasn't a serious injury, but it was a particular activity that had occurred. And the inspector showed up. We showed him the date of the activity, and he calculated the dates and said, you win, walked out. That was in San Francisco. So it's a hard and fast rule. There are very limited tolling, and that has to do with if an employer like hides the fact that a serious accident or fatality occurred. None of you guys are going to do that, right, Kevin?
No, absolutely not. None of our listeners. And I say that with sincerity because not worth it. But what happens, now, if you when you read that carefully, it doesn't say when you receive it, right? What's it say?
You mean when it's issued?
Yeah.
So you're going to see on the top of citations, you'll see the date of inspection and then the date of issuance. And the inspectors, you know, there are sometimes when, you know, Kevin and I will be watching the countdown because we've been involved in an inspection and we get to day 178 and then we get the call from the inspector to have the closing conference because he's ready to issue the citations. I think they have a calendaring software or something, Kevin.
Yeah. Well, and the other one that really frustrates employers is we'll get the call on 184, but when it comes out, it says issued on 6 days earlier, right? But you're within the statute. So then you end up, and this is where the affirmative defense comes in, right?
Yes.
So now, if you're asserting that, now you're going to have to prove that there was something that they didn't actually issue it on the day it says. And so that ends up in something. That's where discovery and things come in, but where the burden shifts to who?
To us. Yeah. Because that's a defense we're asserting, right? Statute of limitations. And so in that case, you'd look at the certified mail and the underlying documents to see if you had, you know, an opportunity to assert that. I rarely see that as something that's going to be particularly helpful. I've had it once in 10 years where it was a slam dunk for me where they didn't even issue the citations. But it's always good. I mean, when I get a citation in, I do the calculation, right? I mean, I'm looking for the low-hanging fruit, like statute of limitations, jurisdiction, you know, anything that can help kick it to the curb. It's important to understand that statute of limitations is a defense for us and that it will be something we talk about when the citations are issued.
All right, Karen, that's great information. And I think we've covered a lot of the basics. So listen for our next podcast in this series. Thanks for listening to Karen and I. Look for our blog articles on ogletree.com. We have recorded webinars related to COVID-19 and the Ogletree COVID-19 resource webpage, along with quite a few other workplace safety podcasts, including a primer on Cal OSHA, accidents and fatalities, Cal OSHA hearings, healthcare facility inspections, and a bunch more. So take care and stay safe, everyone. Thanks for listening today.
Stay safe out there. Bye, everybody.
Thank you for joining us on the Ogletree Deacons podcast. You can subscribe to our podcasts on Apple Podcasts or through your favorite podcast service. Please consider rating and reviewing so that we may continue to provide the content that covers your needs. And remember, the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not to be construed as legal advice.